This is being recorded on Wednesday, March the 25th, 2015. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Baltimore in the Global Market. I'm your host, Dave Custy, and today my guest is Bob Paff. Bob Paff, the son of a factory worker and legal secretary, learned the value of hard work and initiative early in life. His first paying job was setting bowling pins in the basement of a church bowling alley for $3 a night, and that was duck pin, right?
Absolutely. Is there anything else?
That's a good answer. I like that. Good Baltimore boy there. His humble roots growing up in Baltimore City and his earnest ability to seek out the best in people has allowed him to easily connect with everyone from literally the homeless man on the street to the boardroom CEO. Nationally recognized in the field of insurance and benefits, working in the industry for over 30 years, Bob has become a highly sought-after speaker on a variety of topics whose inspiring and empowering messages have reached a diverse list of prominent institutions such as Johns Hopkins University Hospital and PNC Bank, as well as sharing the stage with New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Dr. Ben Carson. He is also an author, blogger, and social media contributor. Bob has been featured on the nationally syndicated Steve Harvey Show, on a Competitive Edge segment on Fox 45 TV, WBAL's Good Day Baltimore, and MPT, Maryland Public Television, Money and Business, as well as having had his own CBS radio show, Communicating to Women, among other media engagements. These appearances have opened the door for his modeling, acting, and voiceover career. Father of six children, Bob currently lives in Roland Park here in Baltimore and generously donates his time in the community, serving as a board member for University of Maryland Hospital for Children Board of Visitors, the Maryland Academy of Family Physicians, as well as being active in his parish community. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Bob.
Thank you, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words.
Well, you know, when I hear those introductions, Dave, the first thing that comes to my mind is my mother would be so proud. my mother and her family's Locust Point roots. I refer to myself as a simple messenger, but I'm a local Baltimore guy. As you said, my first job was setting up bowling pins in the basement of a church, and I'm really still that guy. And so what I want to do at this phase of my life is to give back. I'm trying to teach my six children. I'm trying to communicate with the world, make it a better place, leave it a better place. But really, to kind of put it in a nutshell, it's taken those 54 years of life experiences, Dave, those successes, those failures, and doing something with it. So that's the guy who I am right now, and that's what's gotten me to this point.
Tell us about your history there, starting off with school and all.
Well, you know, I went to St. Wenceslaus in East Baltimore on the corner of Ashland and Collington Avenue, so Catholic school boy. The Catholic Church has really been a foundation of who I am. I'm proud to say I'm a practicing Catholic. And, you know, it's funny, quick story here, you know, but when people talk about giving something up for Lent, Dave, I mm-hmm. thought I'd give something back. So one of the agreements that I made is I go to church every day. And so mm-hmm. it's a nice, makes me feel good. And I have to tell you, when I wake up the next morning, good things happen. So I'm probably going to keep doing that after Lent and after Easter. Went to high school at Lake Clifton in Baltimore's mm-hmm. Clifton Park. And then on to Towson University, majored in communications. Really wanted to be a news anchor. So after college and during college, I interned for two of the local network affiliates and then went to work for one of them. Got married, spent a few years in the banking industry, and then flipped to insurance, built my insurance agency. But the one common thread to all those things, Dave, is I've always enjoyed speaking and writing. So mm-hmm. there's always been that creative side of me. So even when I was in the insurance industry, and I'll be honest with you, and I don't want to offend any insurance types out there, and I did it well, but I did it in a way that suited me, which was speaking a lot, educating right. folks about what a lot of people, Dave, don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. You've heard that expression.
Right.
And it was, for me, on the insurance side, was let's talk about those things. You mentioned Johns Hopkins University, University of Maryland Medical System. You know, let's sit down and talk to the docs about the things that they don't even know that they have. So I built a very successful insurance practice doing that. First marriage ended. Got into a second marriage, as folks sometimes do, and had four children from the first, two from the second. But when the second marriage ended, to kind of cut to the chase there, that was really my opportunity, Dave, to get back into the message. As I had said to you earlier when we started this, I'm a simple messenger. So it was really taking those successes and those failures relationships included, so personal and professional experiences, and doing something productive with it. And that's really what it's all been about for me.
You were an insurance agent, right?
I was an insurance agent.
You always had to, you always wanted to be an anchor, right?
I did.
Basically. And you're always a very vocal and friendly and people-oriented person. Tell us about the transition from that insurance person to your current status.
Great question. Well, one of the things that I had started doing and what helped me to build a very successful insurance practice is I've always been public speaking. And public speaking, for those of you who don't know, is the number one fear for people in business, certainly, but I would say also personally. And think about your own personal experiences or those that you come in contact with. People are deathly afraid, Dave, of public speaking. They perspire, they pass out, they get nervous, they, you know, all of these things happen. I've always been comfortable doing that. And so I built the insurance practice doing a lot of speaking. And I've been doing insurance now for, as you said, almost 30 years. And when that sort of ran its course, and I mentioned that talk about that in the book, what happened there, I really looked at that as a gift, Dave. I look at the things. There's a great Chinese proverb that I love. There's great opportunity in pain. Opportunity in pain. So when things happen to me, and I suggest other people process things this way too, I don't know that there's anything really truly bad that happens. There are challenges in our lives, but I tend to go deep and embrace it and say, what's this all about? So when I transitioned out of the insurance, that's when I'm on three national speaker bureaus as a motivational speaker. That's when I started doing more and more speaking. So for example, the University of Maryland Medical System came to me and said, hey, we're having some conflict between the docs and the administrative staff. Can you help us? Can you come in and talk to us? Can you help to, you know, the communication process? And I said, yes. And so I built a talk, and then I built another talk and another talk, and then you get referrals. Mm-hmm. And so that really sort of segued me into really what I wanted to do. And while I have to admit, disappointed not to become that news anchor and to have left that business at the ripe old age of 25 or so, I'm at a good place. And so things generally happen for a reason if we allow them to. And as I told you, I'm very spiritual and I have a very deep and abiding faith. And I think things do play themselves out for a reason. And I think Dave, we are where we're supposed to be in this life. Mm-hmm. We really are. And I live from that foundation. And so I know I'm doing good work. There's not a day that goes by that I don't get a call or an email or a text from someone who says, I've helped them. And that's really what it's been about.
In terms of that, I don't want to say a lot, but if you believe that things happen for a reason and all like that, that kind of makes you not proactive. But you are proactive about things, right?
Yeah, I am proactive. And I love the question because the...
Not everybody, but I'm just saying, yeah. You know, there are people that saying, okay, this is going to happen whether I do anything or not.
That's exactly right. And so the naysayers, the people that, you know, if you read The Power and you read The Secret, it has an implication that you sit back and wait for things to happen, right? That's kind of what you alluded to. So whether I do anything proactively about it or not, it's just going to happen because it's been ordained. I'm glad you brought that up because that's not what I believe. I do believe that you have to be, and I am, you have to be very proactive. Dave, we only get the things in this life that we're not afraid to ask for. And so by just saying that things happen for a reason does not mean, matter of fact, it's just the opposite. You sit back and wait for those things to happen. It means you go after those things. It means that when things are presented to you, you need to process it and say, okay, this is an arrow in my quiver. Mm-hmm. This gets me a step closer to those goals. And so...
that is the reason.
Right? That is the reason, Dave. But a lot of people fail to get that.
Yeah.
They feel
well. That's the key word: fail.
Fail.
Because people are so afraid that of failing, even in a simplest social situation.
That's right.
You know, it's like, I'm not going to go up to him. And I think you're kind of like me because if I go into a party and I don't know anybody, I'll just go up to somebody and start saying, I'm not really afraid of being made a fool or anything like that because this too will pass too. It's
right.
It's not me.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, we tend to take things too personal. And the other thing is I say to people too, if you never ask, the answer is no.
Exactly.
So all you can get out of it, you know, when you go up to that person, it's a yes. And I take that a step further. You going up to that person, you were meant to go up to that person, but unfortunately, the majority of the population doesn't get that. And we all come from that place of origin. So the things that we're uncomfortable about, our awkwardness, our social issues surrounding meeting new people and creating new opportunities, all comes from somewhere in our life. We have triggers. You know, buttons are pushed. Mm-hmm. So maybe you did that when you were 10 years old and you got slapped in the face for it. Maybe you went up to the girl at the prom, right? Mm-hmm. And you said, "Hey, I'd like to dance with you." And said, "Well, are you kidding me?" Right?
That's right.
So now
just
when you're
stay by the Coke just stay machine, by the Coke machine.
So now when you're 35 years old, and you're going up and you're going to ask somebody for a date, the triggers are that rejection.
Yeah.
Right? We hear
right.
those
you're
voices.
15 again.
You're
right.
15 again. Yeah. I love that. You're 15 again. And there's so many people walking around who are 15 again.
Yeah.
Or 15 still.
All right.
We never
yeah.
move beyond being 15. Absolutely right.
I like that in a certain sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of trying to stay young.
Well, in some ways, we never really grow up. You know, we really, depending on the traumas in our lives, we sort of get emotionally stuck, professionally stuck, socially stuck at that crisis.
Right. It's a defense mechanism.
It is a defense mechanism. It absolutely is. Yeah. And it's hard to get out of that.
But it's you can program yourself. I've found that, you know, I guess I've been somewhat of a hothead most of my adult life, and I'm thinking, that's gotten me nowhere, you know? So I'm thinking, if in terms of dealing with people that seem to be not very, how polite can I be, euphemistic, respectful of what you're doing
right,
or saying,
right.
You know, initially you want to lash out at them. But I've actually been able to kind of program myself and say, look, like the thing that says that everybody has some issues they're
yes.
dealing with, no matter if you're rich or poor or whatever.
Everybody.
And that can be the catalyst for what's happening right now.
That,
so I try to kind of remember that. And it actually does work because
yes.
there have been so many people, which I would think are total you-know-whats.
Right.
And you're thinking, boom,
correct.
It's coming
right.
to me and said, stop first.
Right.
Think about that. So, I mean, it's, you know, at my ripe age of 59, if I can learn things.
Right.
You know? That's
well, you know what it reminds me of, and for the listeners out there, remember this. People don't see us as we are. They see us as they are.
Right.
You see, they see us through their filter. Mm-hmm. They see us through their prejudice or their insecurities and their fears and all of those things.
Right.
And when something happens, It triggers them,
right? Because they're protecting themselves.
They're protecting themselves. Yeah. The problem is, and what we need to overcome in order to be better communicators, is we need to stop taking things so personal.
All right, exactly.
And here's another one I love. What someone thinks of you is none of your business.
Right.
It's really none of your business what somebody thinks of you.
My favorite is from Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, if you actually knew how little people think about you,
right.
you wouldn't care.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. Well, and the other thing Eleanor Roosevelt said, of course, she gave us a lot, but she said, no one can treat you poorly without your permission.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so, you know, let it go. Who cares what those...
That's the tough thing is letting it go, too, because you can really harbor it, and then it goes, it burgeons, and it gets fiery, and, you know, and it affects
the ghosts
everything
and the
else.
Voices and everything else.
Right.
It just, for me, Dave, I have to tell you, turning 50, and we hear 50 is the new black, 50 really, for me, was a wake-up call, and I've heard this before. 50 really... And I talked to so many people, and it's funny, if I talk to my female friends, they said, oh, no, I discovered that way before 50. But it's really that kind of decade where you don't really care what anybody thinks anymore.
No, exactly.
And so you've earned the right. You've made the mistakes, right? You've survived because there you are. You're still young. You're energetic. You've got a sharp mind. You're creative. It's really a great decade to kind of put it all together because you still have the energy and the strength and the vision to really do it. And you're letting go. I know I am, and I try to get other folks to let go of all those negative things. You know, we spend more time purging our wardrobe and planning our vacation than we do purging the negativity out of our life.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So I tell people, if you're around negative people, negative energy, I had a lunch meeting the other day with a local media guy that you and I know, and he said something that was profound. He said, if you're at a table and the energy's negative and people are saying, that's a dumb idea, Dave. You can't do that. What are you thinking? Get up and leave.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I love that. I mean, can you imagine being in that meeting and you say, guys, this isn't working for me. And remove yourself from that. I was like, I got to steal that. I got to jot that down. And I'm going to do it. I'll let you know how it works out. But
that is. That's the thing, you know? Just remove yourself from people like that.
Just remove yourself.
Because that's exactly what you said when you're 50. you realize, why am I dealing with these people anyway? Because
that's right.
they're not helping me do anything.
That's right.
I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to be hurt.
That's
so
right.
So it's just, if I don't see them again, it's too
and
soon.
And Dave, you can do it in a friendly way.
Be polite.
Things don't have to be confrontational. Actually, the nicer you are, right? It empowers you.
Exactly.
To say, hey guys, I'm really sorry. I'm not a good fit for you. I remember firing an insurance client one day. And the guy just really was, I just couldn't make him happy. And so I fired him and I referred him to a friend. The friend said, thanks a lot. But I said to him, it's really we've come to that bump in the road or that fork in the road, whatever it was. Well, I don't think I'm your guy. I don't think I can give you what you deserve. And he looked at me like he had nowhere to go with that.
Yeah.
But that's a nice way to say to somebody, we're done.
Yeah. Get out. Sorry, but. Nicely. Thanks.
Yeah, you don't have to
because
be mean.
It's a win-win because it doesn't.
It is a win-win.
Actually, I've done that and thought, it feels pretty good right now because, even though I could have just gone the other direction, plus he does too.
That's
she
right.
Too,
You have empowered them, you've freed them, right? You've given them permission.
And there's no reason
to
make them feel bad either. It's like, what purpose
that's
is that?
That's a win-lose. Yeah. That's somebody's got to lose if I got to win. The win-win is to say that is absolutely right. And I know a lot of corporations that when they fire, to use that word, employees, a lot of times it's like, culturally we're not a good fit. You need to go to the place where you feel comfortable. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What it's all about.
But having said that, it is tough.
Oh,
it's tough for some people. Because there's some people that, this might be a blanket statement, but there are some people that just won't be satisfied.
They won't be satisfied.
They're the ones that you run the fastest away.
That's exactly right. No, it's Dave, you said it. You have to remind yourself of these things every single day.
Oh, yeah.
And whether you need to take a breath, you need to count to 10, whatever it is you need to do to get there, but it's very, very, very difficult.
But it was amazing to me when I was saying that I actually programmed myself because I kept telling myself, don't react initially. Don't react initially,
yes.
Or don't react. And I do, even with the people that
there's
say,
that button, right? There's that
the
trigger.
Intractable right. people. You can't and say, well, even though because, and then like you say,
right?
I'm out of here.
That's right. Right. That's right. Okay. Well, and by putting forth that positive energy, the book, The Law. We talked about The Power and The Secret, The Law of Attraction, all those things. I really do believe that you get back the energy that you put out into the universe. Chopra talks about we're all connected by the same energy. Is your energy positive?
Yes.
Is your energy negative? Are you going to let those folks pull you down? So I tell you, it's awful. I don't want to say I look forward to firing my friends, but certainly.
I know what you mean. You're
right?
Making a point.
You know what I mean.
You're making a
point. Yeah, I mean, it's nice. And I physically feel better, Dave, when I release myself of the bonds of that negativity.
Right.
That's just a way to put it. You are releasing yourself from the bonds of that negativity. And it's very, very empowering. It really is. If we could all get there.
Yeah. And plus, if it's your friends, they'll still be your friend.
That's exactly right.
If they're worth friends.
That's
anyway.
Because
they'll know that you were in a tough situation to do this.
That's right.
And you've done it the best positive way you can.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Worth it, too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So before we start to get into the book and all, tell me about your influence.
It may surprise you that... my dad left the family when I was 10 years old. I left my house when I was 16 years old, had a social worker. I have a brother who passed away in 2011. He was my only sibling, 4 years older than me. Thank you. We were never close. My parents are both deceased. I never really had, I can tell you, I lived with the family of a friend of mine for a while, and they kept me on the straight and narrow, and I love those folks to this day. And without them, I don't know where I'd be, but I never really had a male role model, Dave. I never had a person that, I want to be like Mike, the commercial or whatever it is. I never really had anybody that I aspired to be. And so because of that, and people ask me this question, I get it a lot. How did you come to this? How do you know so much about this stuff? And I really do think it's the experiences and the mistakes that I've made that I go deep. I'm a very emotional guy. I'm very in touch with my feelings. But I have to believe that there's, to some level, there's been a divine intervention that's really given me, and I do refer to myself when we started this as a simple messenger. I mean, I think I've been given some gifts. I think I'm my place in this world, is to help other people, and therefore I've been given the tools to do it. But, That's a question that I continually ask myself, because I honestly had no male or female role models. Mm-hmm. My mother was, you know, devoted to the family, and I adored her. She passed away in 2011, and she was, her family was all from Locust Point. And so, you know, great Irish stock.
Right.
Good Baltimore girl. That's exactly right. Went to, you know, secretarial school, whatever you did when you, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. And I always remember my mom working. And so the work ethic and those things like that, I think I got from my mom. But, you know, some generations, some cultures tend to be more stoic than others.
Right.
My mom was not terribly demonstrative. Well, the one thing I had, Dave, the one anchor that I had, and I would ask folks to think about this, is I always felt loved. And so despite the fact that my dad left when I was 10 years old, my parents, you know, divorced, and neither one ever remarried. Sadly, I think they both went to their graves still loving one another. I always felt loved. And I think the foundation of who we are as people comes from that. I look at my failed relationships, and I look at the women I've chosen in my life. And I'm a big fan of Meg Meeker, who's a pediatrician who wrote a book called Smart Fathers, Smart Daughters. And what Dr. Meeker says is that in a young girl's life, the most important person in a woman's life is her dad. And because think about it, your dad's the first man to love you, and he establishes that bar. And so I've spent a lifetime, you could argue, choosing people who did not have those healthy relationships.
Right.
So the point of that is, it's what's your foundation, Dave? I had a foundation of love, despite the fact that it was a fractured, broken environment. I knew that both of my mom and my dad loved me. And so that's...
You don't have to be demonstrative to...
Correct. You're absolutely right. I told you I was very involved in the St. Wenceslaus Parish. I was an altar boy. I was very involved in school. And so I think, and I hope, that people seek out those healthier outlets. You know, get involved, be involved, seek out those role models. Don't be afraid. We're afraid to compliment people. You know, we're afraid to introduce ourselves to people. I'm trying to break those barriers to all those things based on my own experiences.
So the book, from the evolution of Bob Pfaff, how did this book arrive?
Everybody says, and I do believe to a large extent, we all have a book in us. It's a difficult process that I now know to write a book. It really is. And I remember a conversation with my friend Paul Coates, who's a local guy who Paul's in the printing business, Black Classic Press is his business, and we're good friends, been friends for a long time. And I said, Paul, I want to write a book. And Paul's heard me speak. And he said, Bob, your book's right here. It's in all your talks. I, as a motivational speaker, I customize every talk that I do, Dave, based on the need, based on the corporate need, based on the problem, based on the circumstances. So I don't take things off the shelf, dust them off, and say, what works here will work there. So I started thinking about relationships and broken relationships and problems and anxiety and all these things. And really the answer for me was, and here's the book, we don't communicate effectively as a society, as a world, as a people, as families, as communities. And I use myself, it's a transparent look at my life, communicating to win in life, love, and business. We don't effectively communicate. And I think it is that the foundation of everything that we do, and it causes all the problems that we have, Dave, not only in relationship around the world. I mean, look at what's going on in politics. Look what's going on with, you know, people killing one another. And I mean, ISIS and all these things that are going on around the world. It all stems from communication. And so, and I'll tell you this too, we'll go back to that divine intervention. It was really, it came to me like an epiphany. Communicating to Wind is a brand, but that came to me. And I thought, we all communicate, some better than others. We all want to win. And it's a relative term, Dave. As you know, for some people, winning is having the biggest, best car, living in the biggest, best house. For some people, winning means having a great relationship with your children or your spouse or your business associates or being part of your community. So it's a term and a title that's not offensive to anybody, and it really works. I get into what I like people to do is, you know, we talk about things like defining success. We talk about things like embracing your adversity. When negative things, I'll use that word, happen to us, what I'd like people to do, and I've done these things myself, Dave. So again, the book is really my life story. I want people to basically find their voice. And I want people to look at both the positive and the negative experiences in our lives. I want people, and I encourage people, to find their faith. You know, for some people who may have wandered, and, you know, it's always been there for me. It's always been a place as a young child. When I left home, when my first marriage ended, I was in the first pew of church every morning when I dropped my kids off to school. So I encourage people, we talk about things, there's a chapter in there called Who's on Your Team? And you and I kind of alluded to this. It's that purging, Dave, of people who should not be on your team, should not be on your team. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to be friends with everybody.
Right.
We really don't. And I also talk about too is, and it goes back to something I just said earlier, people don't see us as we are, they see us as they are. And sometimes it's very difficult when you break out of a mold. People put us in boxes. They do.
Right.
They need to see us somewhere. And if you start breaking out of that, for me, I reinvented myself at age 50. And a lot of people didn't know me as, you know, the writer, the speaker, the author, all those things. You're known as, you know, the milkman or the mailman or the insurance guy.
It's always right? just one thing. And it just negates an entire person.
It really does.
I try to do that myself too, like I was saying,
yeah, with
the program. And because there are people though that you think this is them, this is the core of them, but maybe it's just something just happened 10 minutes ago to them too.
Right.
That's why there is. But
right.
It's pervasive that people will say, oh, I've met him for 10 minutes. He's this.
Right.
He's that. You know, there are all different types of, I mean, there are people in history.
Fort Lincoln's one of my, probably the hero. If you look at Lincoln, you know, Lincoln lost pretty much every election until he got to the point of being president. I mean, Lincoln wasn't a matinee idol. He was, right? He wasn't right. All those things. And yet Lincoln.
Not a pretty boy.
Oh, not a pretty boy by any stretch of the imagination. So you look at Lincoln, look at one of my heroes is Milton Hershey. And part of the fact that, you know, I have six kids and we like Hershey Park.
Yeah.
We go there a lot.
And Hershey bars, I'm sure.
And Hershey bars, one of my favorite. Yeah, exactly. But if you look at Hershey, you look at Lincoln, you look at Walt Disney, you look at Michael Jordan, you know, look at J.K. Rowling from Rowling right. Rowling from right from.
Well, she's wonderful because she's no longer a billionaire. She's giving away her money.
Yeah.
You know, so
well,
much.
Well, but they're
that,
all,
you know,
Dave, they were all abysmal failures.
Yes.
Oh, you know, she took that book and she got so many, hundreds of people that said, no.
Man, it's forget never. About it. Yeah.
Michael Jordan, Einstein, you know, failed an elementary math class. If any of those people had quit, had given up, most of the people that I mentioned went bankrupt. You know, Walt Disney, I mean, Hershey was so committed. Hershey built a town for his employees.
Right.
And when the Industrial Revolution came in and he could have replaced a lot of these people, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. His goal, Dave, and I tell people all the time, and if you're listening out there, I want you to think about this right now. Wake up every day. What's my goal? And how do I get there? What's my goal? How do I get there? What do I really want to be? Milton Hershey wanted to make the world's best chocolate. It was that simple, you know? But he wanted to surround himself. He's a great example. He surrounded himself with people that shared that vision. And then he took care of them.
Yeah.
So he built, I mean, the Hershey School. You know, he built roads and churches and hospitals and all. The Hershey Medical Center is one of the most renowned in the country. And so I think, and what am I speaking about here? What's the common thread? The common thread, in my opinion, is passion. Michael Jordan had a passion for basketball. Einstein had a passion for math, not one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. You know? But you can't argue passion, Dave. I tell people at all times, like, maybe you're smarter than me, you're better looking, you're this, you're that, but you're not going to out-passion me. Because that's the thing that nobody can take from you. Uh-huh. Nobody can take your life experiences. And this book is not, I'm not a math guy. I'm not the facts and figures guy. And I'm not an academic. But these are my stories. You have stories. Everybody out there listening to us has a story. What's your story and what's your passion? And I think if we wake up every day and we play to that, Dave, and we manage to that, and we focus on that, and let those naysayers naysay away. If that's right English, but you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Just follow that passion.
It's tough, though. I mean, because life gets in the way, as they say, in terms of the bad things that happen or your situation now. It's great that you have that driving force because that is really the foundation.
Well, the ghost, right?
There is still things that creep in all the time.
We're all haunted all the time. One of the things, and I talk about this in the book too, is I have a philosophy that we're actually not afraid. Let me back this up a little bit. Gandhi, and it was really nice because I wrote this in the book before I even knew Gandhi said it. So I'm holding some good company here. Gandhi said that everything that we do is based in fear. And when you look at the book, you'll see there's a diagram in there that everything we do is based in fear. It's fear of what? Fear of rejection, fear of embarrassment, fear of disappointment, right? So we don't ask a lot of those questions and we don't seek the things that we want and we need because of our fear. I actually think that success is one of the things that we're afraid of. Why? Failure is relatively easy, not easy to accept, but easy to accomplish. All you have to do is quit. You can give up. You can say, I wasn't tall enough. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't thin enough, right? I wasn't blonde enough. I wasn't this enough or that enough. But success is really hard because success, you're going to face that ridicule and everything else that you and I talked about. You're going to face those demons. You're going to face those ghosts. You're going to face those doubts and you're going to have to overcome them. And you know what? They never go away. Mm-mm. You try to keep them at bay. You try to, if you line up 10 different people and we all have those ghosts, the winners are going to be the ones that are able to keep those ghosts the furthest away because we all have them. They come back. I have them. You know, it's so funny. People say to me, who motivates the motivator? There are days that, you know, I'm a June birthday, and so I love the sun. So whether it's seasonal affective disorder or not, I don't do well when the sun doesn't shine. And if it's raining, forget about it. You know, the covers are going over my head. Okay. I'm like, wait a minute. But I'm supposed to be on all the time.
You wouldn't do well in Ireland or the UK.
So I understand. But, but think about the significance of that. It's okay. Allow yourself time to... It's like when somebody passes away, allowing yourself the time to grieve, allow yourself time to be sad. Not every day is going to be a great one. And I have to tell you, this is a great story. My 20-year-old son, I have four boys and two girls. My 20-year-old son came to me 2 weeks ago and he said, Dad, why do you go to church? And I said, you know, Carter, it makes me feel good. If I'm lonely or I'm sad or if it's a great day that we just talked about, I know that I can go there. It's just me and my thoughts. I know it's a place where I'm safe. I know it's a place where I feel loved. So maybe I'm going back to that environment. And he said to me, and this was profound. He said, you know, I'm feeling a little empty. How many 20-year-old boys are going to admit that? He said, I'm feeling a little empty. And I was thinking that if I go to church with you, maybe that would help. You know what? He's gone every day since. Yesterday, I couldn't be there because I had an appointment. So I sent him a text last night. And I said, you're going to be in church tomorrow. And he said, no, I'm sorry, Monday I wasn't there. I sent him a text about going with me on Tuesday. And he said, oh, yes, where were you last night? And I was like, wow, now he's going without me. But what we need to do, it goes back to the tools in your toolbox. It goes back into circling, you know, finding. I tell people all the time, who's on your team? Who are your go-to people? Who, when you're down and you're out or you need some advice, can you pick up that phone, Dave, and you know they're going to be there for you?
Well, I found later in life that we really only have a few good friends.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like when you were growing up or even in your 20s and such like that, you go out with a bunch of people.
Right.
But the people that stick with you,
right,
there's only less than a handful of them.
That's exactly
that you can really count on.
Well, and life is when you're growing up and you're a teenager, you're in your 20s, let's face it, life's less complicated.
Right.
You're in school. Your biggest problem is my girlfriend broke up with me, right?
And you think you're going to live forever.
You think you're going to live forever. So when you're 30, 40, 50, and you start losing those jobs, and you start having children, and you start getting divorced, and you start having medical issues, that's where the rubber meets the road. And that's when you're calling up your buddies or whoever you're hoping. I jokingly said that you really find out who your friends are when you get a divorce. And I think in large part, that's true. But now I say, you want to find out who your friends are, write a book.
Oh, right.
Because, again, remember? Mm-hmm. Because now all of a sudden people are like, well, who does he think he is? Who does she think they are? How do you know that? Right?
Right.
So now you're getting all those people that wanted to write their book, their book, haven't done it. You did it. And suddenly it's like, where do I put him? Where do I put her? You see? Because once you start breaking out of that mold of people who knew you when.
Right. And then, it's the ones that stick with you because they say, well, that's what you want to do.
That's right.
And I got to do what I want to do.
I got to do what I want to do. That's right.
And it's, you know, mutually exclusive. And,
right.
Geez, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's a powerful, once you gain the awareness of that, Dave, it's very powerful. It really, really is powerful to liberate yourself from those chains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So sell your book a little. Give me some bullet points of what you would like people to get out of your book.
I wrote the book to be a handbook, a guide. You know, we're going to go into the studio and we're going to create an audio book, and we've got big plans that I know we're going to talk about, but I wrote the book to be a guide, and I wrote it so people, the size, it's 16 chapters. It's 16 chapters on, you know, different life experiences, my life experiences and processing those things. But I wrote it as a handbook that folks, and they're doing this, Dave. I get people from around the world. So we're in Europe now. We're in Dubai. We're in Tunisia. We're big in Australia. People are putting the book on their nightstand. They're dog earing. I'm a big dog ear guy. Mm-hmm. People hate that, but I'm a dog ear guy. And they're,
as long as it's just your
book. As long as it's your book, you can do whatever you want with it, right? You don't want to give somebody their book back.
You got to be positive
book
with
back.
Books, too.
That's exactly what you do. But people are taking the book and they're putting it on their nightstand. And the fat mo, my picture's on the front of it. We talk about communication, but I want people to feel connected to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm getting the joke that, you know, hey, it's, you know, going to bed and we're going to have, you know, and have hot chocolate and Bob's book or whatever. But they're embracing it and they're gifting it. The other cool thing is I tell people who are in sales and who are in marketing, you know, buy the book and use it. For those business people out there, we look for touch points. We look for ways to touch our clients and our prospects. You should be touching your clients, your prospects, 8 to 10 to 12 times a year. And this is a great touch point because what people are doing, I had one person one day, Dave, went on Amazon.com, is where you can get the book, or you can go to my website, BobPath.com, and ordered 16 copies of my book.
Mm.
So what people are doing is they're gifting them. And think about it, it's a powerful introduction. It really is, because even if, let's take this down on a very personal level, you've got somebody in your life, in your family, your neighborhood that is conflicted or you're having issues with them, you can't really go up and say, you have a bad attitude or you need to change it. You could give them a book.
Right.
That would be a great, hey, buddy of mine wrote this book, or hey, I stumbled on this book.
Yeah.
I think you'd enjoy it.
You'd do it in a positive way.
You can do
too,
it in a positive
because
way.
Even then, you could alienate them.
It's exactly right. So what people are doing is my friends are taking it on airplanes with them. I got a guy who emailed me today. He's taking it on vacation to Park City, Utah. And I started realizing, hey, let's have fun with this. So the picture of the book is popping up in Dubai, Tunisia, Ireland, Scotland, Canada, all over the world. And people are using it as a handbook, as a guide, and I could not be more pleased at the fact that they're doing that.
Sounds very good. And it just came out in January, is that right?
It came out in January. It went to number one. I was thrilled for a while. No, it's still number one in its category of communication. And Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People was like number two or three.
All right.
So that was pretty cool.
Wow, yeah.
So getting
up there with Napoleon Hill.
There you go. That would be, and we talk about Hill in the book too. Yeah, so it came out. It's knock on wood. It's still number one, and I've already been asked to write the sequel. I have to tell you, I didn't know that I had a sequel in me. I can understand.
What's it going to be, Bob Path? This time it's personal.
I actually love that. Well, actually, you know, I think a cool idea would be, think about this: all those folks that want to write a book that can't, or you know, don't know where to start, but they all have stories. So let's do a communicating to win. Taking it personal. Let's do a compilation of all those stories. Because what I'd like to ask people is, you know, where is a time in your life where communication caused a problem, you know, or it benefited you, or, you know, tell us a story around communication. And so maybe that's the second book. Because, Dave, the one thing, the common thread about this, and I do really, listen, I'm blessed to have been given the tools and the gifts by God. I really believe that, to not only who have crafted this message, but I can articulate it. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've been given a skill set to do that. Not everyone can. But saying that, I do look at myself as a simple messenger. I do look at this as a gift, and it's a gift that I need to impart to the world. So I want you to run with it. I want, you know, the folks in and around the world to run with it, embrace it, interpret it. You know, I say use me, but don't misuse me. So I really want people, we're looking for champions, mm-hmm. you know, corporate champions, personal champions, people that get the message. And I've been very fortunate, and then I haven't met one person, Dave, who has said to me, I think it's a dumb message.
Oh, really?
Not one person who says that they think communicating is a dumb message or right. a dumb topic or a stupid thing to aspire to. Not one. Mm-hmm. And if you're out there, I want to know you. But, you know.
Sure, you got to get both sides.
Right? Yeah. But I haven't, there's been nobody who said that communicating to one is not a good message.
No, it's very positive there, too.
Yeah, it is very positive.
So we touched on it a bit. As you said, you might be writing another book, but where do you see yourself 3-5 years down the road?
The goal, the short answer to that question is a TV show. What we want to do is the world is obsessed with reality TV. There's mm-hmm. a surprise. But I think we need more good reality TV, not just entertainment. We don't need to live vicariously through all these folks that are out there. I think there's enough of that going on. What I want to do, and you had mentioned the Steve Harvey show, and I was on his show back in 2013, and we had a brief conversation. He said, I like you. I want to have you back on the show. I think this is really a message of empowerment. I want to turn this into a TV show. We're looking for, again, those corporations that think it's a good message. We're looking for those sponsors. We're looking for those champions. We're looking for those partners. But I want to take this message to the street. I mm-hmm. really do. I know that every day, everybody that's reading this book, seeing this book, is being empowered to be all they can. This is not about being me. This is about, or making people like me, Dave. It's about helping them become the best that they can be. So a couple things that we're doing. We designed these events called An Evening with Bob. We're partnering with some restaurant groups. We just did one with Roy's Hawaiian Fusion in Baltimore. They've been a terrific corporate partner, and now we're moving down into the D.C. area in Bethesda, and on April 9th, we'll be at a restaurant called Crave, which is based in the Twin Cities, and they're all over the place with great plans for expansion. They have embraced, both those restaurant groups have embraced the message, and I've created this model. It's called An Evening with Bob. So people come for 2 hours, they get dinner, they get a cocktail, they great networking, great socializing, great connecting, a great venue, and they get an autographed copy of my book, and I speak for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes about the book, kind of like you and I are doing now. And I'm very inclusive when I speak. I get down off the stage and I get into the crowd, get into the audience. I do the same thing, Dave, in these restaurant venues mm-hmm. where I want people to stand up. We had people from Leesburg, Virginia, drive to Baltimore on March 19th to be at Roy's to hear me speak.
Very good.
And I want to give back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want those people to just stand up and say, why are you here? You know, what'd you get from the book? Why did you read the book? Why did you buy the book? You know, what is it about the book that's helping you? And so we're going to travel the country and create these partnerships with folks. From a corporate perspective, and this is worth sharing, when you look at corporations in Baltimore and around the world, if a business has employees who are more communicative and they're happier, then 1 + 1 = 2, and 2 is they're more productive. So if I'm a business owner, and I have been, what's the return on investment? You know, how much are you investing in your employees? Folks have come to us and asked us to create camps, communicating to win camps. Well, we'll take your top 8 to 10 people and we'll spend a day with them and we'll immerse them in a communicative message. We'll empower them to be better communicators. Why? They go back to their business. They go back to their place of employment. And if everyone's feeling empowered, Dave, if everyone has a clear vision of why they're there, the contribution that they make, they're going to sell more. So if folks are out there listening who are really driven by the bottom line, I like to use the word ambassadors. If you have a company, if you're out there, all of your employees need to be ambassadors of your company, or they might not be the right employees. You know, who's on your team? Who's on the bus? You want every one of your employees, Dave, from the janitor to the CEO, the chairman of the board, and I've been the CEO and the chairman of, and everybody in between. I go back to that kid setting up those bowling pins for 3 hours a night. They need to be ambassadors for your message. You and I talked about your message. Mm-hmm. They need to be ambassadors. Surround yourself with ambassadors.
Right.
Surround yourself with ambassadors for your cause, for your message, for your business, for your product, whatever it is. Surround yourself with people who celebrate you, who support you, who salute you, and who are going to be ambassadors for you and for your message.
And you can be the champ, the champion ambassadors for them.
Absolutely. And that's the way it should be. And yeah. I'm going to say this rhetorically, I don't know why we can't be. I do know why we can be, because jealousies come in and and pettiness comes in and all that stuff like that. But Dave, just think about how kinder and gentler, to use former President Bush the first. Think about how kinder and gentler we'd be if we all supported one another. If I woke up and said, how can I help Dave today? And why does it have to be, if I help Dave, I'm diminishing myself?
Right.
Or I'm not helping Bob by helping. I'm actually helping myself by helping you.
Yes. And the thing is that just because you said me,
yeah,
Dave doesn't happen to necessarily have to help me too.
Right. Right.
You know, that's the thing that you learn when our age too, is that I don't expect anything
right.
back.
That's right.
You know?
That's exactly right.
Once you get that mindset.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's to use the term that is used in sales.
So you can help me, and I'm not going to even do anything with you.
Yeah, but you know, and you know what, Dave? And the sooner folks realize that, but it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
You know, let's go back to the sales equation. It's a numbers game. You put it up against the wall, because Dave, my message, your message, Napoleon Hill's message, Dale Carnegie's message is not for everyone. Mm-mm. People aren't going to embrace it. They're not going to change until they're ready. And for some folks, you know, I feel blessed to have come to this at 50. Some folks are really never going to get it. And you and I can't change anybody, Dave.
No.
We can't fix anybody. And we can't get frustrated because we can't.
Mm-mm.
So, right?
Reach everybody.
We can't reach everybody. So if you've got 10 people in your circle, in your center of influence, your COIs, your centers of influence, and only two of them get it and run with it, Dave, then that's fantastic,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You can't. But what we do is we say, oh, those eight. What's
right.
their problem?
We always concentrate on that.
We concentrate thing. On that.
Yeah.
Let's concentrate on the two that really get it, and let's grow that and let everybody else go. You'll feel better and they'll feel better. They're feeling pressure to give you something, Dave, that maybe they can't.
Yeah, it's about focusing toward growth for everybody.
It's that funnel. It absolutely is.
So this is an introductory course, I'm going to say. This is an introductory course on Bob Pfaffer. This is an introductory show. I would like to have you on and update me, you know, and we'll have it a continuing
would
thing.
Would love to.
But for now, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I've been humbled. I've been blessed. I'm grateful and appreciative of folks like yourself and the networks and all the media and the attention that we're getting. I will tell people, we can wrap on this note. This is a grassroots campaign. I encourage people, if I can plug this, you
sure.
know, go to www.bobpaff.com. Yeah,
bobpaff.com,
bobpaff.com. I encourage people to reach out to me through social media. This really is grassroots. People are amazed, Dave, when they reach out to me, they get me. And I understand, you and I both have celebrity friends, if you want to use that term. I don't have a fan page. I don't have all these barriers to entry. Not that at some point, some of those things may have to change, but I'm easy to reach. I'm easy to get to. It's a message of communication. So, and let me throw this out there because I think it's very important. Communication doesn't mean that we have to speak to everyone. Effective communication means that we know who to deal with and who not to deal with, who to have a relationship and who not to have a relationship. There are some folks in our lives that are just too toxic.
Right.
So I don't want people to be listening to this thinking like, well, you know, I don't want to talk to that person or whatever. It's okay.
Right.
Effective communication is knowing. This is about knowledge and in processing and interpreting, you know, how this thing works for you, Dave. And that goes back to my handbook comment and my guide comment. So I need your help. I'll close. And when I say your help, I want everybody's help out there. Embrace this message. Make it your own. Put your company logo, wrap it around it, own it, interpret it, do whatever. It's not my message in that communication is universal.
Right.
It goes back to...
Well, one of the things that I learned being as old as I am is that what not to do.
Absolutely.
You know, it's very important.
Or even more important in some cases. We're learning what not to do just as it is learning what to do. And I've learned to, and this term I like to, quiet your mind. sometimes you just need to quiet your mind because we have those knee-jerk reactions. People push our buttons. Situations push our buttons. And sometimes you just need to quiet your mind or think about, here's something I love that a terrific therapist taught me a long time ago. How does something make you feel? So when we have conflict in our lives, and it doesn't matter where it comes from, always ask yourself, folks, how does that make me feel? And think about the gut instincts. That's where that comes from. You know that. And Chopra, again, to quote him, says the gut's never wrong. And so when your gut's telling you, don't go there,
right?
Don't do this or don't do that, listen to your gut. But that's that energy thing that we ignore a lot of times. And I have found that when we listen to that, things generally work out. So you're absolutely right. It's just as important, the thing, knowing the things that you shouldn't be doing as it is the things that you aren't doing. The people that you shouldn't be associating with, just as important as the people that you should be associating with.
One more time, just give some contact information.
Folks can reach me at www.bobpaff, all one word, B-O-B-P-A-F-F, like Frank, P-A-F-F.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter at Bob Paff.
And they can find the book there.
They can find the book. They can go to Amazon.com to buy the book, or they can go to BobPath.com and buy the book.
And the book is called Communicating to Win in Life, Love, and Business, which about covers it all.
It really covers everything. It really does.
Written by Bob Paff. I want to thank Bob for being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
And you've been listening to me, Dave Custy, on Baltimore in the Global Market.